présent par l'intérieur, mesdames et messieurs, vous entendez probablement aussi l'avion qui circule autour de la tour de l'Étoile.
Margaret Anglin, the famous Canadian actress, born in the House of Commons here on Parliament Hill when her father was Speaker of the Canadian Parliament, will now read an original poem entitled Dominion Day 1927, written for this occasion by the eminent Canadian poet, Bliss Carman.
From Grand Pré, with its brimming tides and orchards on every hand, to our western gate on gorgeous space, where wondrous mountains stand, where the bridge through the sea, or the hills, or the plains, we are born to one hatred land. Our freedom we brought from running, our blood from 10 lakh hills, the heritage of our father's faith, good heart and a steadfast will to receive and uphold the living word.
And don't you cry, vesper bells are ringing, angel voices singing, quintuplets your lullaby. Babies 5 in number, all prepared for slumber, cuddle down and close your drowsy eyes. God above will send you angels to attend you. Soon you'll hear them sing your lullaby.
As a fitting climax to this Silver Jubilee presentation, bands from coast to coast link once more in a musical chain in the playing of the Maple Leaf Forever. This time we will start in Vancouver and move eastward. I will now start the metronome, which will set the tempo for all bands from coast to coast. Here it is. Now on a given cue, the Vancouver bands will play two rolls on the drums. This will be the cue for the bands from Vancouver to Halifax to commence playing. Each city will be called in turn, commencing with Vancouver. Please stand by. Are you ready? Watch the beat. All right, Vancouver. Here's Edmonton. Regina. Quebec. And finally, Halifax. And in the forming of this final chain of bands from coast to coast playing the Maple Leaf Forever, the Canadian Radio Commission terminates this part of its 7-hour Jubilee broadcast.
Norman McGill is dead. Two others, Dr. D. E. Robertson and Albert Scaddings of Toronto, Ontario, are still in the depths of Moose River mines late this afternoon. They can hang on for 8 or 10 hours more, but that won't be necessary, we don't think. The latest word sent up through the pipeline, which has been sunk into the pit by a diamond drill, brings word from the men below that they can hear tappings. They can hear the men in the workings breaking down the rock to get through to them. It is a broken country down here, drab and desolate. You come in over roads almost impassable. A country of scrub and second growth, of rock. Rock, relentless, hard, cruel hard. It is against rock of this sort that miners for the past week have fought and fought, grim-lipped, determined, and they're winning their fight. Inch by inch, the rock is retreating. But another force, sinister and relentless, is creeping up from behind to possibly snatch a hard-earned victory from these gallant men who have worked so long and so well. And it is this water seeping, creeping slowly through a thousand fissures and the crushed and broken walls of the mine that now sends us the greatest warning. The water is rising. Mr. Henderson? Yes, Mr. Henderson, would you say a few words?
I'm sorry that I interested H.R. McGill in gold mining. Otherwise, he may not have been where he is tonight.
You knew Mr. McGill very well, did you, sir?
Yes, he was my best friend.
Well, thank you, sir. And that, ladies and gentlemen, was Mr. McGill's best friend. And here now, ladies and gentlemen, is the captain of the rescue team from Stellarton, Nova Scotia. And he has a few words to say to you. Here is the captain, Simpson.
Hello, Stellarton. We're getting along fine. And we'll have those men up in a couple of hours. Mr. White, I hope you're listening in. Our manager.
Well, thank you. That's fine. I'm...
Hello, Bertha. And Edwin.
All right. I'm sure he's listening in. We have nothing further to add to what has already gone before, except that we wish to contradict an erroneous impression that is being created in the United States by certain independent interests. As a rumor has gone abroad and has been published as a fact that the mine is in danger of caving in. This is absolutely not true. This is an official statement. This is absolutely not true. These conflicting statements that are going out from here, the newspaper men and the radio men too, I don't mind telling you, are very tired and very nervous at this moment. And statements are being issued from far distant points. We're standing here. We can spit into this pit. And yet, from thousands of miles away, people are contradicting what we have to say. This must stop. I'm stopping these broadcasts now until something definite happens. I don't care to go on the air anymore and be contradicted from thousands of miles distant. We have given you the official word from the government officials working here, and we cannot longer carry on under these circumstances. And I want to tell you that there is no danger here to the miners or to the buried men. Everything is safe, and that is the final word. And this is the Canadian Radio Commission. We'll be back with you again at 11 o'clock Eastern Standard Time, unless something breaks beforehand. This is the Canadian Radio Commission.
Calling the world. Ladies and gentlemen, right in front of us here, right now, this moment, the men brought up Dr. Robertson from the pit. He's come up here, been carried along this channel of men, He's curing miners, and he's been placed in this ambulance, and he looks well. He's smiling. He smiled. He smiled at the boys here, the newspaper men. He smiled at me. He looks pretty cheerful. And he is definitely saved, and Scadding will be up shortly. This is for the world. They have been saved. They're out of the mine.
Hooray! Hooray! Tiger! Hooray! Tiger's come! Hooray! That's great, boys.
I'll tell you, it's been a magnificent job. It's been a marvelous thing. These boys from Skeleton, Westville, Timmins, all the different mining points in Nova Scotia, Goldenville, they've been down there working and slaving, and I'll tell you that this is the most dramatic thing. I'll remember this to the dying day of my life. Everything now is over, and until from 30 minutes from now, when I'll have some further news for you, this is the Canadian Radio Commission.
Good evening. I am speaking to you as chairman of a board of governors of a corporation of which you are at once the shareholders, the debenture holders, and the patrons. I refer, of course, to the Canadian Broadcasting Corporation, which at midnight on Sunday last succeeded the Canadian Radio Broadcasting Commission in the control of national radio as a Canadian public service. Your directors have pledged themselves, one with the other, that they will act as a unit, non-political, non-personal, and non-sectional. If I were to speak idealistically, I would say that it is the desire of all of us to annihilate time and space, to make as many men and women in Canada as possible quietly happy and humbly proud through the agency of this great invention, which must surely have been intended to enrich our lives by its contribution to the enjoyment of our leisure moments.
Ladies and gentlemen, the Canadian Broadcasting Corporation brings you now the message of His Former Majesty, King Edward VIII.
Mesdames, Messieurs, Radio-Canada diffusera à l'instant une communication du ci-devant roi d'Angleterre, Édouard VIII.
This is Windsor Castle. His Royal Highness, Prince Edward. A few hours ago, I discharged my last duty as King and Emperor. And now that I have been succeeded by my brother, the Duke of York, my first words must be to declare my allegiance to him. This I do with all my heart. You all know the reasons which have impelled me to renounce the throne. But I want you to understand that in making up my mind, I did not forget the country or the empire, which, as Prince of Wales and lately as King, I have for 25 years tried to serve. But you must believe me when I tell you that I have found it impossible to carry the heavy burden of responsibility and to discharge my duties as king as I would wish to do, without the help and support of the woman I love. And I want you to know that the decision I have made has been mine and mine alone. God bless you all. God save the king.
15 rounds for the world's heavyweight championship. Weighing 193, wearing purple trunks, outstanding contender for heavyweight honors, the former heavyweight title holder, Max Schmeling.
Right and left to the head, a left to the jaw, a right to the head, and Donovan is watching carefully. Lewis measures him, right to the body, a left up to the jaw, and Schmeling is down. The count is 5, 5, 6, 7, 8. The men are in the ring. The fight is over on a technical knockout. Max Schmeling is beaten in one round.
The time, 2:04. First round, referee stopped it. The winner and still champion, Joe Lewis.
Single-handed, never Chamberlain fights on. For days and for nights, he's had barely an hour's rest and has endured the insults and sneers of many people in many countries. Has he failed? I do not believe it. When dawn breaks in another 2 or 3 hours, I still believe that it will find Europe not at war.
When I was a little boy, I used to repeat, if at first you don't succeed, try, try, try again. That's what I'm doing. When I come back, I hope I may be able to say, as Hotspur says in Henry IV, out of this nettle danger, we pluck this flower safety.
Leave Canada without saying a word of farewell to you all. Seeing this great country with all its varied beauty and interest has been a rare delight to me. But what has warmed my heart in a way I cannot express in words is the proof you have given us everywhere that you were glad to see us.
The Queen, I think I told you, is wearing powder blue, also a powder blue hat. And she's still wearing those beautiful pearls that we saw this morning at the history-making ceremony in Province House. And now as she moves away and juts her bow out into the sun that shines around the edge of the pier shed, we can make out a great deal of her green boot topping.
Who's there?
It's the Happy Gang from Toronto calling CBK.
Oh, well, come on in.
Here we are, the Happy Gang's men. Here we are, honor you do. Here we are to chase away your troubles with a song, a melody or two. So gather round, come on and get together, and we'll start our program with a bang. For it's time to laugh and sing a shout out. We're the Happy Gang.
The CBC presents the Happy Gang from Toronto with Kathleen Stokes at the organ. Blaine Mathan as violin. Versatile Bob Farnan. Eddie Allen and his accordion. And with Bert Pearl, your master of ceremonies, at the piano.
Thank you very much, Hugh Bartlett, and a great big hello to all of you friends everywhere. We couldn't think of a better opener for our show tonight than the good old barrel polka. We mustn't say the first word of the title because it's absolutely taboo. So we'll have to settle for the barrel polka. Let's get into the swing of things, kids. Here we go.
have a barrel of fun. Let's roll out that barrel. We've got the blues on the run. Zing, boom, tararo. Ring out a song of good cheer. Now's the time to roll the barrel, for the gang's all here. Bring out a song of good cheer. Now's the time to roll the barrel, for the gang's all here.
The Right Honorable W.L. Mackenzie King, Prime Minister of Canada, speaking from Ottawa.
Le très honorable Mackenzie King, Premier Ministre du Canada, parlant d'Ottawa. Le Premier Ministre.
The Prime Minister.
Despite her unceasing efforts to preserve the freedom of Europe, the United Kingdom has today, in the determination to honor her pledges and meet her treaty obligations, become involved in war. This morning, the King, speaking to his peoples at home and across the seas, appealed to all to make their own the cause of freedom which Britain again has taken up. Canada has already answered that call. On Friday last, the government, speaking on behalf of the Canadian people, announced that in the event of the United Kingdom becoming engaged in war, in the effort to resist aggression, they would, as soon as Parliament meets, seek its authority for effective cooperation by Canada at the side of Britain. All I need to add at the moment is that Canada, as a free nation of the British Commonwealth, is bringing her cooperation voluntarily. There is no home in Canada, no family, and no individual whose fortunes and freedom are not bound up in the present struggle.
Visibility range 100.
Visibility range 100.
Visibility range 100.
Enemy in sight.
Bearing green
30.
One destroyer.
One destroyer.
Enemy incarnation
130
right.
Enemy speed 25.
Enemy speed
25.
Salvos.
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 Ready to open fire.
Shoot.
Ladies and gentlemen, I'm speaking to you from the land of somewhere into which lately some tens of thousands of Canadians have vanished. A few years ago, there was a popular song about the beautiful land of somewhere, but this somewhere is not exactly beautiful. It is fascinating. It is filled with meaning and power. And to men, that is more than beauty. I am an old soldier myself, a little too gone in the legs to be of use in this war, unless as a camp follower and teller of tales. But to me, the contrast between this Canadian expedition and the old one is beyond belief. Where we went with banners and bands, these boys go like foxes in the night. I sometimes wonder if, in the old war, a lot of us were not born upon a great wave of sound and bunting to the very edge of battle, and many of us not a little dismayed by the chilly silence of no man's land. In this war, No artificial stimulus has been used. These magnificent young Canadians have not been drummed into war. No bugles have sirened them. No vaunting flags have dazzled them. They're here in this land of somewhere for reasons that would have been unbelievable to our leaders only 20 years ago. They are here by their own will. And I do not believe I have ever seen a more inspiring gathering of men.
All right, boys, fall in.
CBC sound equipment was at the dockside as the troops prepared to embark. We hear the last roll call on Canadian soil. You may catch a name you know.
Sergeant Green. Let me describe an embarkation. It is at one of the nameless ports where Canadians embark across the Atlantic. The train slows on the pier side. It is packed with men. They have traveled from prairies and forests, from city and town and farm, hundreds, thousands of miles. Now they smell the sea. Great ships loom beside them. In the offing wait the mighty battle wagons of Britain's sea. A voice on a loudspeaker calls, "Detrain all troops." Out of the coaches the soldiers spill and form in their platoons on the guides who act as markers. The rolls are called by the sergeants. In their battle rompers, their packs and haversacks neat anew, the lines respond in the darkness of morning. A command rings, the regiments turn in file and with a sharp beat of feet march straight aboard ship. Before the sun rises, they are aboard and away.
Final reunions of officers who are to sail and officers who had to remain behind were held on Saturday night in the lounge of the ship. It was rather a sad occasion, particularly for those who couldn't come with us. But you'd never guess it from the hubbub which went on. Came that memorable morning when we went out on deck and saw land. Planes flew overhead and we were amazed to learn that we'd arrived so soon. We steamed slowly into the harbor and the ratings of each ship cheered us as we went by. You can hear them in the distance and our own cheer in return. So, Canada, from all of us here, and I know this wish would be echoed by the thousands of soldiers with us, now asleep in their barracks, good night and God bless.
Tonight, for the first time, we present a radio record of an actual air battle in progress. Charles Gardner, the BBC air observer, had the luck to be on a South Coast cliff with sound recording equipment when this battle began. He at once started recording, and the result is a feat of impromptu reporting unique in the history of the war to date. While Mr. Gardner describes the action, the sounds of battle cut through his words. Exploding bombs, anti-aircraft fire, and bursts from the fighter plane. If you listen carefully, you'll hear the sound of close fighting in the air. There's a noise like a kind of a da-da-da. That's a Messerschmitt. Then a brr. That's a Spitfire gun. The shouting and cheering come from the anti-aircraft gunners who are standing just where they are observed.
Germans are dive bombing a convoy out in sea. There are 7 German dive bombers, Junkers 87s. There's one going down on his target now. Bomb. No, he missed the ship. He hasn't hit a single ship. There are about 10 ships in the convoy. But he hasn't hit a single one. And I'm looking around now. I can hear machine gun fire, but I can't see our Spitfires. There must be somewhere there. Oh, here's one coming down now. There's one coming down in flames. Somebody's hit a German, and he's coming down with a long streak. He's coming down completely out of control, a long streak of smoke. The man's bailed out by parachute. The pilot's bailed out by parachute. He's a Junkers 87, and he's going flap into the sea, and there he goes. Smash! Terrific crumble of water, and there was a Junkers 87. There was only one man got out by parachute, so presumably there was only a crew of one in it. Now then, there's a terrific mix-up now over the channel. It's impossible to tell which are our machines and which are the Germans. That was a bomb, as you may imagine. Here comes, there's one Spitfire. There's a little burst. There's another bomb dropping. Yes, it drops. Oh, they missed the convoy. No, they haven't hit the convoy in all this. The sky is absolutely patterned now with bursts of anti-aircraft fire, and the sea is covered with smoke where the bombs have burst. But as far as I can see, there's not one single ship there. Yes, I can see 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 Germans tearing back towards France now for all they can go, and here are our Spitfires coming after them. There's going to be a big fight, I think, out there, but it will be too far away for us to see. Of course, there are lots more German machines up there. Can you see, sir? Yes, there are 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 on top layer. 1, 2, 3, there are 2 layers of German machines. Well, there's another fight going on way up now. I see about 25,000, even 30,000 feet above our heads, and I can't see a thing of it. The anti-aircraft guns are just put up 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 bursts. Well, yes, we've just hit a Messerschmitt. Oh, that was beautiful. He's coming right down now. I think definitely that first got him. He's finished. Oh, he's coming down like a rocket now. Absolute steep dive. Let's move around so I can watch him a bit more. Here he comes. Down on a steep dive. A Messerschmitt looking for the parachute. And he's looking for the... No, pilot's not getting out of that one. They're being chased home, and how they're being chased home. There are 3 Spitfires chasing 3 Messerschmitts now. Oh, boy, look at them go. Man, look how the Messerschmitts... Oh, that is really grand. And there's a Spitfire just behind the first two. He'll get them. Oh, yes. Oh, boy, I've never seen anything so good as this. The RAF fighters have really got these boys taped.
Today, Princess Elizabeth is herself to take part in the Tugendhat and speak to the children of the Empire at home and overseas. Listeners in the United States of America will also hear this broadcast. Her Royal Highness, Princess Elizabeth.
In wishing you all good evening, I feel that I am speaking to friends and companions who have shared with my sister and myself many a happy children's hour. Thousands of you in this country have had to leave your homes and be separated from your fathers and mothers. My sister is by my side, and we are both going to say good night to you. Come on, Margaret. Good night, children. Good night, and good luck to you all.
Lauren, would you give us a level, please?
1, 2, 3, 4. This is the CBC.
Okay. Here's more coffee, Mr. Green.
Okay, kid, out of the studio. Just 1 minute to go.
CBR, Vancouver.
CBK, Watrous, Saskatchewan.
CKY, Winnipeg.
CBA, Maritimes.
This is the National News Bulletin, a summary of the day's news. The largest convoy ever to set out across the Atlantic Ocean from Canada has arrived in Britain. Scores of ships unloaded their cargo amid the cheers of the dock workers and onlookers.
We have yet another army, Canadians. This is the army which has no ranks as armies know that word. It is your army and mine, the army of the ordinary people, the civilians who must watch and wait, and maybe pray as well. The army which has no generals, no colonels.
The Smiths, the Browns, the Robinsons, and from Regina, Mrs. Green.
My boy is in the army and has been overseas for more than a year, and we are helping him all we can in the best way we can. There's $40 a week comes in this house, and there's $3 going out for war saving certificates. I can't let Canada need my help in vain.
Oh, how are you doing at the fair, girls?
Oh, just fine.
Oh, there's lots of people. Having a swell time.
Getting better every year.
A lot more fun than staying at home.
I guess it is at that. What about this young lady? Where do you come from?
From Georgetown. I work at Malton.
What do you mean, Malton? What do you work
Victory at? Victory Aircraft, building Lancasters.
Did you bring your husband today?
I haven't got a husband.
Oh, any prospects?
Maybe after the war.
They tell me the manpower situation's pretty bad. Is that true?
Oh, that ain't my trouble. I got a boyfriend, but he's overseas.
Oh, that is a different story. How about you? What do you like most about these county fairs?
Oh, I like the swings best.
Why is it all the girls I meet tell me they like the swings best?
I guess because they get dizzy on them. There's nothing much else to get dizzy on nowadays.
Here's something. Is it Margaret? Is this Mary? Mary, you just take a walk down the runway. I'd like you people to see this. These are the famous soft dressing gowns that we make using men's old woolen socks, you know, taking off the worn feet. Just stay there, Mary, will you please? We cut off the worn feet, cut off the, what do you call it? The tops, yes, but you don't call it the tops. What do you call them? You know what I mean. The cuffs, that's it. Cut off the cuffs so that we have the straight pieces. As you can see. Would you open up, dear? Let them see the inside. We cut the lining of gray flannelette. And never mind, Mary. That's all right. Cut the lining of gray flannelette and baste on your socks and then feather stitch them on. And you'll always have a few old white socks that you can dye to get your red color, you know, for the collar and for the cuff. Thank you very much.
A charming buzz! A charming buzz!
A German world!
Ridiculous!
Adolf Hitler's not so mad he thinks he can control the whole world.
No!
A German world. That's the most utterly fantastic thing I ever heard of.
Oh, yes!
Oh, Hitler will never come here. You can be sure of that.
So speak many unthinking Canadians. Familiar words. They've been spoken before by millions of people in a dozen European capitals. But the thing that seemed the wildest of fantasies has happened. Today, through the streets of those 12 cities, resounds the harsh sound of conquest, the steady tramp of the German army. And behind the German legions have followed the German administrators, the German Gestapo, and the German New Order.
A German world! a German world!
Presents a special program with a special message and a special object. A program addressed particularly to the young men of this Dominion, but also to everyone within the sound of this voice who loves our Canada. Thirty-two thousand men. Wanted at once to join our fight for freedom.
Don't make me laugh. 32,000? Why, I've seen more men than that watching the horses run in the summer afternoon. Is this a special call?
It is a special call. A call for men to fill up certain gaps, to man some guns, to ride some tanks, and to do some several other jobs that must be done at once.
Gold, silver, dollars. Money.
Share the wealth. Very lovely lady coming up here. How do you do? Well, welcome to you indeed. Don't you feel lucky to be the first person who's never withdrawn tonight?
Scared to death.
Are you scared to death? Well, that makes two of us up here. What is your name?
Helen McMillan.
You fixed yourself a $20 question to start things off with here, Helen. Isn't that swell? Well, here we go now. This question says, just for fun, let's say that Hugh Barton has borrowed $5 from you. Is that clear so far?
Mm-hmm.
Let's go on from there. Well, that leaves you short, you see. So you borrow $5 from me. What a hope you've got. Is it clear now Hugh's borrowed $5 from you, and you've borrowed $5 from me? Now I'm broke, see? Everybody's getting broke here tonight. So I borrow $2 from Hugh Barton. Now, with one single payment, all three of us would be square. Now tell me, for $20, who pays whom and how much? Is the question clear, Helen?
Yes,
it is.
So.
All right, let's do that, eh? Here we go. Helen is thinking now, ladies and gentlemen. I wish you could see her thinking.
Hugh would pay you $3.
Hugh would pay me $3? That is absolutely right,
yeah.
Helen. That is right.
Very good.
Very good. Give her a real hand. Congratulations, Helen.
When I warned them that Britain would fight on alone, whatever they did, their generals told their prime minister and his divided cabinet, in 3 weeks, England will have her neck wrung like a chicken. Some chicken. Some neck. Sir, we did not make this war. We did not seek it. We did all we could to avoid it. We did too much to avoid it. We went so far in trying to avoid it as to be almost destroyed by it when it broke upon us. But that dangerous corner has been turned. The Canadian Army, now stationed in England, has chafed not to have been in contact with the enemy. But I am here to tell you that it has stood and still stands in the key position to strike at the invader should he land upon our shores.
Very good wishes to you as usual from the Beaver Club, that famous rendezvous for your lads over here in Great Britain, situated right in the heart of London. And first of all, we're calling Innisfail, Alberta. Here's Trooper N.L. Nelson.
Hello, Mother. This is Norman speaking. Hope the
hope you're okay and all the family. Hope Nora is better. Thanks for the cigarettes. Keep them coming. And my aunt is with me. Andy Carney, thank you. Thank you and goodbye.
Goodbye. Goodbye, boy. Grand going. Now then, Sergeant Morgan P. Flood of the Royal Canadian Air Force calling Saskatchewan. And what is the name of that town of yours?
Forget.
Forget, Saskatchewan.
Hello, mother, dad, and all. Burnett, relatives, and friends. Feeling fit again. Love and keep smiling. Hello, Mr. and Mrs. Dermody. Burnett is with me in London. Is fine and sends his love. Attention, please. To parents, families, and all friends and members of the first class of Air Crew at Toronto, Initial Training School, I wish to express our praise and sympathy. We who remain will proudly continue in their objective. We are proud to have known these gallant men. Chins up and keep smiling. Victory will be ours.
Atta boy, nice going. Now then, Toronto, another greeting for you. And here to send it is Sergeant Harry Cordner.
Hello, Ian. Marge, Bud. Having a grand time. Lots of love, dear. Cheerio. Hello, Ed Foster. Get those hockey games over this winter.
Well, yes, that was tap dancing. And according to Cecil DaCosta, Toronto dancing instructor, it's very easy if you know how. And today in the CBC series called Fireside Fun, our topic is how to learn to tap dance. Mr. DaCosta.
Hello, everyone. This should be quite an interesting experiment to teach you a step or two of tap dancing over the air. I don't know that it has ever been done before, but I believe it can be done, and I'm going to try to do quite simple steps, rather slowly at first. Then later we'll put on a record and do them to music. Now that we are all trying to find our amusements at home and avoid dashing about in cars and using up precious gasoline, tires, and money that could help our war effort, one of the most valuable accomplishments we can have is a parlor stunt that will keep the party humming.
Let us think, once and for all and soundly, of the myriad trees, rows and rows of trees, swaying gently in the warm, caressing oriental breeze. Trees which gave us rubber. Row on row they stood, firmly rooted, tended with the care that's given only to the tree that's good and rare. Row on row they stand today, but the land has passed into another baser hand. That is the fact. The simple, ordinary fact that must be faced. Let us then think about it.
Listen for the beat of the music. Left foot, ready, go. Shuffle, step, 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 shuffle, step. Hit it out hard. Let's hear you. Shuffle, step, shuffle, step, shuffle, step, shuffle, step, shuffle, step.
Here is the strongest of reasons why no excuse should remain for anyone to say that because of a restriction upon the exercise by the government of its full powers, Canada's war effort is not all it might be. Should the day come, and it may come soon, when Canada is faced with attack, and we need help from the United States or Britain or any of the United Nations, how would we feel if we thought their governments were restricted in their power to aid Canada? Danger threatens us from the east and from the west. It is in the face of this peril that for the defense of our freedom and of our country, the government asks you to give it a free hand.
This is Rumi Pelletier speaking to you from London. It's been a wonderful day. I don't think there's a Canadian in Britain whose heart didn't pound a bit faster today. Each and every one of us was infected by a kind of electric enthusiasm. And no wonder we were proud. As I walked along the streets of London this afternoon, these were the headlines I saw in the evening papers. British, Canadians, U.S., and fighting French in Dieppe Commando Raid. Or again another title. Tanks landed in Dieppe Commando Raid. U.S., Canadian, and fighting French take part with British. And if I stopped to talk to anyone, all conversations started with remarks like this. Grand show, you Canadians. Or else, the Canadians are at it. Now we'll get somewhere. Well, all this rejoicing is all very well, but I'm inclined to think it's just a bit premature. Also, it must be remembered that Combined Operations Headquarters have not as yet issued a full-dress communique. In other words, it seems wise to exercise a bit of caution before shouting full-throated hosanna.
Broadcasting now about the Dieppe raid, at a time when details are just becoming available. I'd like to say this to you in Canada. We've suffered heavy losses, and I saw our men die, but never have I seen men die more bravely or fight with such great heart as our Canadian troops.
Mom, will you give me 10 cents special, please, quick, and an envelope, and you put that letter to CBC?
Wait a minute. Calm down, young lady. And what has the CBC got to do with special quick 10 cents?
It's got plenty, Mum. Because do you know what, Mum? The Clover Club is going to have a Carrying the Torch to Britain party. It's a game, Mum. Carrying the Torch to Britain. And may I have 10 cents to get one? May I, Mum?
Daphne, will you calm down? Yeah.
All right.
Now, all right, tell me about it.
Well, the CBC has this game called Carrying the Torch to Britain.
I see.
It's a map of Canada, Mum. And you get a little top with it. And you spin the top, and that tells you the route you have to take and how many moves you can make. And it's more fun, Mum, because if you meet up with submarines or icebergs or anything like that, you have to go back. And we're going to have a party to play it. And it's only 10 cents. And it's a dandy map. You'd want me to have a good map, wouldn't you, Mum?
Yes, Daddy, yes. All right.
I take the trivial cue from you. Dear, let's go sing.
How exciting!
Our 5th Canadian Victory Loan opening a week from tomorrow, this is Mary Pickford, who will never forget that she is Canadian-born, asking the privilege of making the first subscription to that loan, and hoping, praying, sincerely that it will do its small part to speed the victory.
This is Matthew Halton of the CBC, speaking from France. It's 2 minutes to five. 2 minutes to five in Normandy. And the sun hasn't risen yet over us or over the Germans 800 yards away. It will rise on a fearful scene, because at 5 o'clock precisely, the Canadians are going to attack. And they'll attack with the most enormous concentration of fire ever put down on a small objective. It's hardly late enough to read these notes into the microphone. The morning is as soft and beautiful as a swan gliding down a quiet river. But just wait a minute. I'm in a stone barn with a company of Western Canadian machine gunners who are going to be in battle soon, drawing fire to aid the main attack. Little white rabbits and baby ducks are playing at my feet. They don't know that this barn will soon be shelled and machine gunned. The attack will come across right in front of us and toward us. I've never had a better observation post for a battle, and I dread what I'll see through this door. I wonder if the Germans over there can guess what hell is about to break on their heads. At 5 o'clock, and it's now about 10 seconds to five. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15. Here she goes.
We take you down where the East begins, to Canada's Maritime Provinces.
Got my dancing boots on, got my Sunday best, going to the barn dance tonight. Got a date with my gal, the one I love the best, going to the barn dance tonight. Talk about your strutting, just watch me put it on. I won't begin to get my wind until the break of dawn, and I'll still be dancing when all the rest are gone, going to the barn dance tonight.
Report number 57, August the 26th. This is Matthew Halton of the CBC, speaking from Paris. I am telling you today about the liberation of Paris, about our entry into the town yesterday. For hours, we had strained our eyes for the first sight of Paris. And then, suddenly, there it was, the most beautiful city in the world, and the people surging into the streets in millions. We were among the first vehicles, and the people just went mad. We drove for miles, saluting with both hands and shouting Vive la France till we lost our voices. Every time we stopped for a second, hundreds of girls pressed round the Jeep to kiss us and to inundate us with flowers. But as we drove along the Boulevard Saint-Germain toward the river and the bridge leading to the Place de la Concorde, the crowds thinned out because there was fighting just ahead in the Chamber of Deputies. It was indescribably dramatic, fighting, yet the people frantic with the joy of liberation. Then I asked a policeman how I could get round the fighting and across the river to the opera and the center of the city. I asked if there was still fighting round the opera. The gendarme at once telephoned to the Mackie. The Mackie at once sent a car to lead us round. From that moment on, I knew what it was like to feel like a king. Three people of the Mackie came and got me. Two young men and a beautiful girl, an actress. One of the loveliest women I've ever seen. They broke into tears when they saw I was Canadian, and they kissed me 20 times. Then they took me in their car, and we drove through the wildly cheering crowds with our arms round each other. We crossed the river to the Île de la Cité, the cradle of Paris history, and us there now, hand in hand with history, and past Notre Dame, and then up the Avenue of the Opera to the Scribe Hotel. Here the crowds were just beginning to come into the streets, mad with happiness. My friends were shouting, "Il est Canadien, he's a Canadian." And I knew what it was to feel like a king. We were all kings for a day. In fact, when I asked the proprietor of the Scribe Hotel whether it would be possible to get writing paper, he said, "You can have anything in the world you wish. You are a king." In a few hours, we made friendships that we'll treasure all our lives. Can you blame me if I call this fantastic? Paris is free. Paris is happy again.
The news of final victory in Europe came to Toronto a few minutes ago, and we got down here to the City Hall as fast as we possibly could. We arrived just as a large crowd of cheering people, waving flags and shouting, people in uniforms and people in their motor cars in Toronto's busy Bay Street, keeping their hands on the horn in order to do something in the way of sirens to greet the victory. And then in American fashion, all the business premises round here are throwing paper out of the window. Paper streamers...
There isn't much left to say about VE Day, except that never did a war have so many. It seems, looking back, that every day since we arrived at San Francisco has been a VE Day. And, of course, the real truth is that the German war has ended piecemeal and is still not absolutely finished. Aside from the Americans of Patton's Third Army, the ceasefire has sounded for all of our boys in Europe. For everyone with a son, husband, father or brother over there, this is the greatest news next to hearing that he is on his way home. That can't happen at once. All the shipping in the world couldn't bring the millions in Europe home within 3 months. And for many, there is a job of occupation to be done until they can be relieved. For others, there is another tough job to be done in the Far East.
Here on my right is a young man in the black beret of the tank corps in Canada. It's called the Canadian Armored Corps. He's waiting here, he tells me, to arrange for a marriage license. His bride has come back from overseas. That's right, isn't it?
Yes, that's right.
Now, what's your name?
Bob Ferguson.
Bob Ferguson. And you're waiting for this marriage license. That's what you're thinking about, Chief Judge Poe.
Yes.
But what about the news of victory? What's the first thought that brings to your mind?
Well, it's a great day for all the Canadians over in Holland, Germany, and so forth. But I haven't been over yet. I wish I had have. And I'm looking forward to getting in on the final punch of Japan.
That's right.